so long ago that no one remembered the time. It stood back in its gloomy, narrow strips of uncared-for, smoky gardens, whose broken iron railings were supposed to protect it from the surging traffic of a road which was always roaring with the rattle of buses, cabs, drays, and vans, and the passing of people who were shabbily dressed, and looked as if they were either going to hard work, or coming from it, or hurrying to see if they could find some of it to do, to keep themselves from going hungry. The brick fronts of the houses were blackened with smoke. Their windows were nearly all dirty and hung with dingy curtains, or had no curtains at all. The strips of ground, which had once been intended to grow flowers in, had been trodden down into bare earth, in which even weeds had forgotten to grow. One of them was used as a stonecutter's yard, and cheap monuments, crosses, and slates were set out for sale, bearing inscriptions beginning with, "Sacred to the memory of." Another had piles of old lumber in it. Another exhibited second-hand furniture, chairs with unsteady legs, sofas with horsehair stuffing bulging out of holes in their covering, mirrors with blotches or cracks in them. The insides of the houses were as gloomy as the outside. They were all exactly alike. In each, a dark entrance passage led to narrow stairs going up to bedrooms, and to narrow steps going down to a basement kitchen. The back bedroom looked out on small, sooty, flagged yards, where thin cats quarreled, or sat on the coping of the brick walls, hoping that sometime they might feel the sun. The front rooms looked over the noisy road, and through their windows came the roar and rattle of it. It was shabby and cheerless on the brightest days, and on foggy or rainy ones it was the most forlorn place in London. At least that was what one boy thought, as he stood near the iron railings watching the passers-by on the morning on which this story begins, which was also the morning after he had been brought by his father to live as a lodger in the back sitting-room of the house number 7. He was a boy about 12 years old. His name was Marco Loristan, and he was the kind of boy people look at a second time when they have looked at him once. In the first place, he was a very big boy, tall for his years, and with a particularly strong frame. His shoulders were broad, and his arms and legs were long and powerful. He was quite used to hearing people say, as they glanced at him, "What a fine big lad!" And then they always looked again at his face. It was not an English face, or an American one, and was very dark in coloring. His features were strong. His black hair grew on his head like a mat. His eyes were large and deep-set, and looked out between thick, straight, black lashes. He was as un-English a boy as one could imagine, and an observing person would have been struck at once by a sort of silent look expressed by his whole face, a look which suggested that he was not a boy who talked much. This look was specially noticeable this morning, as he stood before the iron railings. The things he was thinking of were of a kind likely to bring to the face of a 12-year-old boy an unboyish expression. He was thinking of the long, hurried journey he and his father and their old soldier servant Lazarus had made during the last few days, the journey from Russia. Cramped in a close third-class railway carriage, they had dashed across the continent as if something important or terrible were driving them. And here they were, settled in London as if they were going to live forever at number 7 Philibert Place. He knew, however, that though they might stay a year, it was just as probable that, in the middle of some night, his father or Lazarus might waken him from his sleep and say, "Get up! Dress yourself quickly. We must go at once." A few days later, he might be in St. Petersburg, Berlin, Vienna, or Budapest, huddled away in some poor little house, as shabby and comfortless as number 7 Philibert Place. He passed his hand over his forehead as he thought of it, and watched the buses. His strange life and his